Everyone, good to see you all. This week's parsha is Baalotecha, and again, this is not a Bible study class, so I'm not going to get into the parsha too much because it's really a hodgepodge, rather a sort of a miscellany of things. It, of course, as we have all through Sefer Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, we have the grumblings of the people, the complaints. The most famous ones, of course, are now coming up in this parsha. They are tired of manna, which is giving them food every day to sustain them, and they complain about not having meat. And then we have the story of the quails coming, and so much quails that within a while. It's as the term used in the Torah. It's as if it's coming out of their noses. There's also the stories of Pesach Sheni. This idea that those who miss Passover would be able to do it a month later. First Amendment, if you will, an amendment to the Torah that we see actually recorded into in the Torah. We also have the departure of Jethro, going back to his own land. We have the story of prophecy breaking out in the camp with Eldad and Medad. There's quite a lot going on. And the Parsha ends with a very famous passage of Miriam and Aaron complaining to their brother Moshe about his marrying a Cushite woman. That's a very complicated question. And also the fact that why does he see himself as a superior prophet to them? Moses. Basically, is God tells Moses, Aaron, and Miriam that Moses doesn't have to see God in any indirect way, but speaks directly, whereas the other prophets, Miriam and Aaron and others, see God in a dream or in a vision, but not directly. Miriam is in this end of this parsha, punished for her complaints against her brother, and she's afflicted with tzara'at, which is a white, scaly skin. Mistranslated as leprosy all through the Bible, mistranslated. And we know the very famous line that we say every Shabbat when we have the healing aliyah. He says, El na refanala, oh God, please do heal her, the shortest and most succinct and direct bracha that we have in our tradition. El na refanala. So the beginning, of course, the first opening of the parsha is quite enlightening. Because it talks about lights, it talks about kindling the menorah. Now, the menorah is a seven-branched candelabra. It's not the Hanukkah menorah. Okay, that's what people often say. I know it's hard for people to separate the two, but a eight-branched menorah is called a Chanukiah. Chanukiah, not a menorah, but with Chanukiah is hard to say. Too many syllables, I guess. And has a in it, you know, so that's not good either. So it became menorah, the Hanukkah menorah. But what is the seventh branch menorah? Well, the mitzvah is that the Kohen Gadol every day would have the obligation of lighting the menorah, the wicks, in olive oil, pure olive oil. And this is called Ner Tamid, the daily. See, we translate Tamid as the constant. So every shul has a Ner Tamid hanging in front of the ark. You may have seen that, right, in many shuls. And that's on all the time. But the reality is, if you did it the way the tradition had it, you would turn it on every day. But since people will forget, so they leave it on all the time. But the idea was, when you say Tamid, it means daily, it's done all the time, daily. It's not necessarily on all the time, because obviously there isn't enough oil for it to last forever. There was nothing miraculous about this. But what was miraculous was basically this idea that the menorah itself has within it all kinds of, how should I say it, virtues. And these virtues are that they are, first of all, it comes from one piece, one piece. I think that's really a very important idea that we have. It's actually a block of gold from which, within the block of gold, these seven elaborated branches emerge, and they're of one piece. They're not taken separately, then attached. And that's talked about quite often when the description of the building of the Mishkan took place back in Sefer Shemot, and later on in Vayikra. So one of the lessons that I looked for and tried to find out is what is this, what is the importance of it all coming out of one piece? What is the importance of that? So I found something I think really is helpful to us. One of the rabbis and one of our commentators says very beautifully, he says, if indeed the seven branches of a menorah are coming out of one piece, what does that say? So one answer came in the mystical tradition that that each of these branches is a unique characteristic of different souls, SOULE, SOULS, souls. So man, it says, or humans were created in the image of God, it says in the book of Bereshit. Among the many meanings inherent in this statement is that our soul's composition is the likeness of God's divine attributes. Now, I think this is so important because when we say man was made in God's image and God has no image, so what is it that is the image of God within in us? That's a question. Certainly not the body, even though that's the way it's often talked about. But it's really according to the different traditions, according to Maimonides, for instance, who's a rationalist philosopher, what it says made in God's image was made with the sense of rationality or intellect, the intellect. Others in the more mystical Hasidic tradition see it as the soul, and that the soul's composition is the likeness of God's divine attributes. Now, these divine attributes, you all know, I think you know, but it comes up again and again and again. There are 10, if you will, aspects of the divine, the divinity, according to the Zohar, the mystical commentary on Bereshit, that there are 10. There are 10 different emanations, is the term that's used. We call them in Hebrew Sfirot, or numbers, 10 numbers. And the first top three, Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at. By the way, that's the source of the name Chabad. Chochmah, wisdom, Bina, understanding, and Da'at, which is sort of a melding of the two, is knowledge is what Chabad comes from. So that's no mystery. That's where it comes from. But we're not able, according to the tradition, to get to those top three, Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at, which was part of the initial story of creation. Chokhmah, wisdom, impregnates Bina, and Bina gives birth to Da'at. So you have wisdom, you have understanding, and then you have what's the knowledge of how to do things? It's not enough to have wisdom, it's not enough to have understanding. The real question is, how do you make it into knowledge, something that you can use? The lower Sfirot, or they're called, not necessarily higher or lower. Remember this, we think of things as high and up and down. There is no up and down. I started to bother anybody with that, but there's no up and down. We're on a planet, we're circling around. There's nothing up, there's nothing down. But they talk about the seven lower Sfirot as basically manifestations of different souls, and how ultimately, at least according to this holistic picture, all of these different souls basically align themselves because they come out of the same source. So you have the seven emerging out of this block. The seven branches emerging out of this singular block of souls. So, if that's the case, this tradition believes that each of us has either one or more of the traits of these different souls. So, for instance, we'll go down the list and then we'll open up for discussion. So, chesed, loving kindness, which of course is the beginning of the lower seven. So this is a soul whose service of God is characterized by, and this is very fascinating, a calm and flowing love. A calm and flowing. So when you're a person practicing chesed, loving kindness, you are characterize this soul as a calm and flowing love. And the soul is also overflowing with love for our fellow human beings. All right, so that's chesed. Then we have gevurah. And gevurah is translated in many different ways. One of them is boundary, severity, judgment, etc. And this is the soul of someone who serves with awe and a flaming passion. And this soul is also highly disciplined, with high expectations of himself and others. So Gevurah comes to balance chesed. So you want to prevent an overflow, if you will, too much of an overflow of kindness. You have to have balance with boundary as well. Boundary. And this is true of most things. We have, the waves are bounded by the beach, and those boundaries basically make the possibility of both dry land and the oceans and the seas. Then the third one is Tiferet. Tiferet is a, if you will, trying to literally harmonize. The word is Tiferet means splendor, but it also can mean harmony. And this is basically by synthesizing kindness and severity. And this is accompanied, according to this tradition, by the study of Torah. Tiferet is also a source of the soul's capacity for compassion. Now, the Torah, as you know, is seen as a gift of love. So basically, you have to, our place in the universe is to bring this gift, if you will, into balance. The next one is Netzach, or perseverance. And this is a soul that is constantly battling and struggling, but it's ultimately triumphant. This is the part of our, this is the soul that says, don't give up. I know it's hard. It's always a battle. It's struggle. Belief is a struggle. Faith is a struggle. All of this, but you will be triumphant because you will have Netzach. You will persevere. Then you get Hod. Hod is often seen as humility. The soul is exemplifies it by self-abnegation, ridding one of the self. Bitul Hayesh, it's called in Hebrew, the cancellation of what is of thinginess. There is no thinginess anymore, right? Thinginess. In favor of allowing itself to be overwhelmed by God's goodness. So Hod is a person who basically has emptied, empties, the soul that empties itself and allows itself to be filled and overwhelmed by Chesed, ultimately. Then we get Yesod, foundation or connection, bonding, this, which is basically the soul which has a unique talent in establishing giving relationships, intellectually or otherwise. Relationship. And of course, in the other sense of what the Sfirot are about, Chesed, excuse me, Yesod will bring the top Sfirot down and serve as, if you will, almost like a phallic kind of symbol, a channel, which brings it into Malchut or royalty or the indwelling presence. And this is basically a soul that serves its creator, if you will, in a majestic manner. And one of the ways we understand Malchut is Shabbat. Shabbat, we basically get into that sense of majesty. So in the temple's menorah, all the seven branches were hewn from a single block of pure gold. And we may have different dispositions and different methods of serving, but we are essentially one. And there's really one purpose and one mission. And there are different ways of understanding that. Understanding different ways to accomplish the same goal. And I think we could say, I think with confidence that a great deal of our tradition, particularly in its mystical forms, have basically said that we have a goal, and that is basically to perfect the world and to bring the Messiah, however you understand the Messiah to be, or a messianic age, whatever it is. So the menorah serves as our guiding light to illuminate. And I love the term of illumination because ultimately illumination is found in almost every tradition. The idea of light creating wisdom, and Buddhism, light is wisdom, et cetera, it becomes this very important, if you will, model for how one lives one's life, being guided by light and not necessarily living in darkness and confusion. So these seven kinds of souls, and I like this very much because it really talks about the fact that all of our endeavors at a spiritual level all emerge from a block of gold. The source of our searching, the source of our struggles, the source of our trying to find our true selves within a multitude of options that are there for us, all of them are golden. All of them are golden. All of them come from a very, very deep and valuable source, which is gold. And gold, of course, is seen as one of the symbols of not only wealth but of abundance, etc. So when we light the menorah, at least when the Kohen would get up and he would light, there was a big menorah, by the way. He had to step up on on a sort of a step stool to get to it, and he would light it. And one of the miraculous, quote unquote, how we understand it, is that the three wicks on each side of the center pillar would always point towards the center. Now, this menorah also, I think, what it really comes from is it's a domestication of the tree of life, which was basically there's a tremendous amount of people in history, religious history, spiritual history, who have come to worship trees. I among them. I am a tree hugger, a worshiper. I am overwhelmed by trees in the summer and in the winter, and especially if you have old trees in your neighborhood, which are going, unfortunately, in my neighborhood, and you look up in the winter without leaves, and you see that all of their the design of the branch, it looks like a lot like what's in here on your hand. Pretty amazing, right? It's the idea of fractals, right? And you see, oh, that tree, or that idea of the tree with veins and et cetera, is really part of us as well. It's a very deep part in us, this sense of our connection to trees. The Torah later tells us man is like a tree of the field. Man is like a tree, right? What is the hope? That we'll have roots that will keep us steady and strong, even if there's a storm, right? But on the other hand, those roots give us the ability to ascend. Right? I had a friend of mine who was a Jew. Jubu, he says, I have Jewish roots and Buddhist wings. That's what he says, Jewish roots and Buddhist wings. And he said it works for him because he needs to have something that's really, really keeping him on the ground occasionally, right? Not letting him to totally fly off into all kinds of stuff. So I brought this because, as I say, I think this is really one of the symbols, the most ancient symbol of Judaism. It's not the Magen David, the Star of David, which came much later on. That comes from a whole world of alchemy and all kinds of understanding of casting of spells. There were 5-pointed stars, 6-pointed stars, etc. But this comes from this idea of the sense that there is this organic connection that all of us have to each other, that all of the light we have emerges from the same source. But what is important is to realize it's never going to be the only way. There'll be many different ways that will take that enlightenment and make it work in the world. And more and most importantly, not work in the world, work for ourselves. How do we basically continue to remember that we, all of us, exude light? That's really what I most importantly tell my kids is that, remember, you are vessels of light. And that light illuminates, hopefully, your own mind, your own soul, but also illuminates the world as you go into the world. That's really what we're trying to do. You know, the image of darkness and light, of course, is obvious, but is the first thing in that is created is light. Vayehi or, let there be light. So this lighting of the menorah every day in the Mishkan, later on in the Beit HaMikdash, is basically going back to the root of creation, right? The root of creation. Let there be light. And after that, things will develop. No light, no plants, right? No light. Then the question becomes, what kind of light is that light of the first day of creation? Because the sun and the moon have not yet appeared till the fourth day. So what light is it? And what I would hope we can somehow bring into ourselves is this is the light of the soul, the light of the soul. And that soul light is hidden away. It's called Or HaGanuz, the rabbis say. It's hidden away for the righteous. Why? Because human beings aren't created till the sixth day. So it can't be the light within human beings. Human beings are not there yet. So what is it? It is Or HaGanuz, a hidden light that after we, at least in our tradition, ascend to the next world, which we do after 120 years, right? That with that light, which was created and was not a product of a human, but that is that supernal light, is the term that's often used, and that infuses our paradise, however you want to understand what the world to come is. There are a number of things that are stored there for us for the end of days. This might be an incentive to stay. One is there's going to be this light hidden for the righteous, Or HaGanuz. The second is Yayin HaMishumar, the wine that was made for the grapes of Eden. preserved wine. And the third is Shor Habar and Leviathan, the primordial ox, OX, right? And the primordial sea creature, Leviathan, which you may have, that we use now as the word to describe a big whale, right? Is Leviathan. So when the Mashiach comes, at least according to one wonderful Yiddish folk song, what will we do? What will we do when Mashiach comes, right? We'll have a dinner party. And at the dinner party, Yiddish is, and asuda, a dinner party. And what will we eat at the Seder? Well, what should we drink? We'll drink from Yayin. Yayin, from the preserved wine of the grapes of Eden, rather than the grapes of wrath. I like the grapes of Eden. And then what will we eat? Oh, well, the oh, we'll eat the primordial ox and the great sea creature, Leviathan. And then it goes on. Who's going to teach Torah? Moshe will teach Torah, and David will arrange all the music, and Miriam will come and dance, and Shlomo HaMelech will come, etc. And then we'll have a blowout, a blowout, a major, major celestial barbecue. And that's what we do when the Mashiach comes. I love that idea that it's not like, oh, we're all going to float off into, it's just basically, well, how do we celebrate? We're Jewish. What do we do? Let's eat. there's a song is a sweetness of how intimate everybody feels that they all can sit around the table, all of us, and that's what's messianic. Can all of us eventually all sit around the table, and share? That's really for me the great challenge, particularly in the world that's so splintered. But it's always been splintered. Don't. Everybody talks about how terrible it is now. It was never very really good. So don't be afraid of that. Polarization has been around for a long, long time. It's not something created in anyone's particular place. So each of us possesses a different way of life, a different way of approaching life. And the question is, can we all see that the sources of our paths are really precious? They're precious as gold. And I really think that's very important because we live in a somehow in a world where people seem to want to all be the same or have authoritarian ways of fitting in. You want to fit in, and we don't want to fit in. We want to be who we are. However, we want to get to a place where we recognize, as I said just earlier, recognize that our roots are all from the same place, and that of course is my hope. And hopefully, shared by others as well. Okay, let's open it up a little.